look at, say, Epstein Island. They know exactly who was there, who did what. Everybody knows everything. Ghislaine Maxwell is still living and breathing. She.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Knows everything about everybody. If they can normalize this now, then they clear all of their own names.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on a brilliant guest. This is Elena Barbara, better known as The Based Mother. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me today.
Elena, how did you get the name The Based Mother?
Well, my son is Sunny Faz. He's a YouTuber or content creator. And we had done a video sort of defending Andrew Tate from some lies. And Andrew Tate reacted to that video. And he was the one who said, in reaction to something that I said, he said, "Have you heard of the Based Mother?" Because I was going off on fact checkers. You remember all the fact checkers during elections and you know, the pandemic and all that. And when Andrew Tate was being, you know, lied about, I said, "Where are all the fact checkers now? How come they're not, you know, making sure that, you know, what people are saying is true?" So he called me the Based Mother and it kind of stuck.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. What's your background?
My background is, you know, pretty standard. I'm just a regular American gal. I worked in advertising as a copywriter for several years. I've been a paralegal. I used to work in the concert industry as a talent buyer. And, you know, there was really nothing public about my life at all until Sunny got me on YouTube a couple of years ago.
And what made you want to get into that? I'm sure there's lots of young men out there who try to get their mom on their videos or on social media or whatever. And I'd imagine most of them say no. So what made you want to step up into the public arena?
Honestly, just to help him out. We were very close and he said, "Mom, I want to start this YouTube channel. Do you want to do a mom reacts video?" And I said, "What's a mom reacts video?" I had no idea. So we did it. And this one video, this very first video just took off. And so we started doing more and more. We did hundreds of videos together. And, you know, he's still only 20 years old. So he was 18 when we started. And, you know, then he said, "Okay, Mom, I want to kind of do my own thing." But at that point, we both had our own platform. So I said, "Good, you go do your thing. I'll do my thing." And, you know, we work together once in a while. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. And it's crazy when you don't expect. I never would have expected that my life would be on camera and I would be out here in the world and this would be a full-time job. Not in a million years.
Yeah. What was the first reaction video you did?
It was to Tate. It was the Tate one.
Oh, it was the Tate one. Okay, I got you. I got you. And that was the one that blew up.
Yeah, there were a few Tate ones in the beginning because that was when he was really trending and hot. And, you know, it's funny. I kind of went off on him in that first video because he talked about how he didn't go to his father's funeral. And so, you know, I wasn't all a fangirl, but I still stood up for him because I like the truth. That's all it really is about, is I want the truth.
We all know that in today's fast-paced world, it's harder than ever to live a healthy lifestyle. Just about everyone is struggling with gut issues, stress, inflammation, fatigue, or immune issues. Most of it comes down to diet, but getting nutrient-rich food consistently isn't always easy or affordable. With hectic schedules, processed foods, and the rising cost of healthy options, we all need a cheat code as the game of life gets more difficult. My cheat code is Optimal Human. With over 90 ingredients, including powerful vitamins and other nutrients, One serving of Optimal Human helps me fulfill my daily nutritional needs. And in my opinion, it tastes better than many of the other green supplements on the market. Optimal Human contains powerful superfoods like organic reishi mushroom for your brain, turmeric root for your joints, beetroot for cardiovascular health, CoQ10 for cellular health, and probiotics for gut health. It's simple to integrate into your daily life. Just add one scoop to water, a smoothie, or your protein shake and get an instant, delicious nutrient boost. Try Optimal Human today and get 50% off your first month by going to optimalhuman.com/Zuby. That's optimalhuman.com/Zuby, and you'll get 50% off your first month. Go check it out. And you've gotten more heavily involved in what we could call culture war stuff recently. So you put out a documentary, which I've watched, which is called American Groomer, which is the title sort of says it. I don't know if I'll get my video demonetized or limited just for even saying that word. But what prompted you to make that documentary? And can you explain to the audience what it's about?
Sure. So over the past several years leading up to this, I had watched the mainstream media, you know, really being dishonest about so many things that I knew firsthand. I saw a whole speech that somebody made, and then I saw them take something out of context. So I had developed this distrust. And when I started to see them talking about book bans, saying that right-wing extremists wanted to ban books from school, and that's unconstitutional and un-American, I said, well, let me see what they're actually talking about. So I ordered some of these books that were being banned and from schools. And what I found in them was literally X-rated pornographic, obscene, erotica, illustration. There are a lot of them are, you know, cartoonish and illustrations, like vulgar sex acts. And this is stuff that's in middle schools, which start at age 11 here in the States. And I said, and my head exploded as a mother, as anyone with any sort of decency and common sense knows that children's innocence should be protected. And I just went down a rabbit hole of research, and I started talking to people, and they were like, nah, that's not happening. Or, oh, if it is happening, it's not happening by me. Let me tell you, it is happening. It's happening in all 50 states. It doesn't matter if they're liberal or conservative. It is everywhere in schools and libraries, and children are being sexualized, and there's 50 million of them. And so when I realized people didn't know the truth or wouldn't face the truth, I had to make a documentary, and that's what I did.
What prompted you to make the documentary? Because most people wouldn't take that step. Is that because you are already making videos? I'm just wondering what it is uniquely about you that makes you be one of those people who isn't just like, oh my gosh, this crazy thing is happening, and you see it, and then you get on with your life, or maybe you write a tweet and complain about it, and then you get on. I mean, it takes a lot to make a documentary.
It takes so much. And I had no idea what I was getting into, to be perfectly honest. I'm not a filmmaker. You know, I became a content creator with my son. And even that is, we're still less than 2 years from our first video. So I have a lot to learn. But I chose the video format because that's where me and Sunny were hanging out, right? So I got used to it. And we had an editor. So Sunny's YouTube editor said he would help me with it. And I happen to be a writer, as I mentioned. So the writing part kind of came naturally, and the research for the writing. And I knew that if I just wrote a Substack article, it wouldn't go anywhere. I knew that if I tweeted, it wouldn't go anywhere. And to be honest, I prayed about it. And I kind of felt called to do it, that this was my call to fight for our kids. And the film has gotten legs, and it has gotten some, thankfully, people like you having me on talking about it. It's gotten some mainstream media coverage, and it was made for like $6,000. I mean, it was my editor volunteered. I put up the cash. We did it on a shoestring budget. This isn't an HBO film, but it's getting legs because people are starting to wake up, and it's absolutely disgusting. I digress.
You mentioned your faith there. How do you think that played a role into spurring you on to do this?
It just completely took fear out of the equation. It actually just gave me the strength to say, I'm going to figure this out. I feel called to do this. I'm going to figure this out, and I'm going to get her done. I mean, I've never interviewed anybody in my life. So that part where I had to learn how to interview people, I took a master class by George Stephanopoulos, and I watched about a dozen Tucker Carlson interviews, and I wrote down every question he asked, and then I reformed them to mine. Like, crash course on my own. That's just the kind of person I am. I am a go-getter. And when I feel that somebody's being bullied, which I think children are being bullied into being sexually groomed, that just fires me up. So, you know, quick, how to make a documentary. You'll come up with some videos. I learned just enough to get her done. That one stint I had as a paralegal informed my ability to make sure I got all my music licensing and appearance releases in order. You know, so I had just enough knowledge to pull it off.
Mm. Yeah, no, the reason I ask that question is because, you know, I talk to so many, I mean, across the board, in some ways, millions of people, but certainly thousands of people privately and publicly, and in different countries and in different places and on different topics, there's a small minority percentage of people who are willing to put their head above the parapet and to speak on these issues, which are uncomfortable or deemingly controversial or polarizing, even though in many cases they really shouldn't be. I mean, this is one of those things that you should really have 100% agreement across all adults in any sane society on this particular issue. But we're living in this weird time where we don't. So I'm always curious as to what the drive and motivation is behind people who do use their voice and speak up and speak out. I wish more people would do it. So I'm trying to kind of analyze what those traits and qualities that people have that make them approach it in this way.
Yeah. So it's a personality thing for starters. Like I just am not, you know, I'm not risk averse, which, you know, burns me sometimes, but you know, I still can see the writing on the wall. I know what's going to happen. I know I'm going to get hate or be ostracized or lose friendships. I weigh those things and I see the damage, the long-term damage that is coming at us with our children and what grooming leads them to. So in this particular instance, but I also talk about a lot of the things that are going wrong in our country. And I can look down the road and see what's coming at us. And so I'm thinking, I don't want to get there. I don't want to get there. So I have to speak up now. And I say that to people all the time. Like, how bad does it have to get before these excuses that you have, like, start to lose their weight in your life? You know, I know you don't want to lose your job. You don't want to, you know, alienate your son on his soccer team because you don't want to be that mom. But give me a break. Like, those things are small compared to that our entire freedoms and our way of life are being compromised right now. And we're just so brainwashed into thinking that we can just trust and things will work out. Like, no, we gotta straighten this out.
Yes, you live up to your name. I was just thinking, based. Yes, we very much share the same mindset on this so much because people think really short term. You know, people are so worried about rocking the boat short term because they're thinking about the short term consequences. And I understand that, right? I understand that why people don't want to take certain risks. But I often, when people ask me about this, is I'm always like, well, think of the consequences of not doing it, right? Especially if you're a parent. I get people who are like, oh, well, Zuby, you're not a parent yet. So it's easy for you to do what you do. And I'm like, man, if trust me, when I'm a parent, I'm going to go harder, right? Like on this type of issues, like, right? I have 5 nieces and 5 nephews. And just that alone, just being an adult, just being a human being, being a person of faith, I'm just like, nah, there are certain lines you just don't, you don't cross. And I think one reason why it's been able to get so far is because when you even talk about it, and you see this in some of the documentary, is there's a disbelief factor where it sounds too absurd to believe, right? If you tell people, someone who's just not aware of all this stuff, if you just go to them and you tell them, you know, about some of the books in the schools and some of the things that they're teaching and some of the things going on, it's a bit like the issue over the past decade. I mean, if you went back 10 years ago and you told people that, you know, males are going to be competing in female sports and people are going to be arguing that men can menstruate and get pregnant and men should be housed in female prisons if they say that they identify. Even the most liberal person, if you went back to 2014, maybe certainly 2010, they would have been like, what are you even talking about? That's crazy. That's not real. That's not happening. So there's this level of denial. And then when people see it, there's still some level of disbelief, I think, but people are finally waking up to this.
Yeah, there's stages within the denial stage. There's it's not happening. And then it's, oh, it may be happening, but it's not happening here. And then it's, you know, my teachers, my school principal would never allow that. I know her. And I used to think that. And that where my son went to elementary school from kindergarten to the sixth grade, they're doing, they have these like gender bending play that comes in and talks to kids about, you know, that they may be any gender. They read books in the kindergarten about, you know, how a boy can be a girl and a girl can be a boy. And these are people that I personally trusted with my child. Mm. I can't believe what's happening. You know, could I read you an excerpt from a book? That's in.
I've read many myself, but if you must, go ahead.
This is very uncomfortable, and okay. So imagine this is in American middle schools, where it starts again at age 11.
Okay, is this YouTube safe? I don't mind if it's not. We don't have to put this one on YouTube.
Well, there's no swears in it.
Okay. I don't mind. Go ahead.
All right. His tongue swept my mouth again. In time to the finger that he slipped inside of me. My hips undulated, demanding more, craving the fullness of him, and his growl reverberated in my chest as he added another finger. Tamlin, I begged. He palmed my breast, his thumb flicking over my nipple. I cried out, and he buried himself in me with a mighty stroke. Why is that? Why?
Undeniable.
Undeniable. Undeniable. I in this book here, I'll spare you, but there are, you know, instructions on masturbating with different parts of your body, a whole page just on anal masturbation, details about how to do it, illustrations of porn and how to pick out your favorite porn star. I mean, we're talking, what are we doing? And, you know, this started about 75 years or so ago with Alfred Kinsey, who I'm sure you've heard of, where he published books in which he talked about that children, he did studies on children where he forced orgasms on them and kept track of it and established that children are sexual from birth and it's okay to have sexual activity with children at any stage in their development. And the Kinsey Institute is still alive and well at Indiana University. So for 75 years, they've been training people with this children are sexual from birth ideology and sending them out into the world. And it's been seeping into our culture. And now we have erotica on the shelves of our schools and in classrooms and in libraries for children.
Do you know how long those books have been there?
I don't. Some of them, I mean, you can tell, you know, some of them were only written in the last 2, 3, 5 years. So I'm not sure when exactly it started. That's a really good question. But I can tell you that the American Library Association is absolutely all about it. They don't even try to hide it. The teachers' unions in America are behind it. Planned Parenthood, the Human Rights Campaign has reading lists for teachers to use from pre-K up to the grade 12, where they have progressively more vulgar and sexual content in them. And it's all under the umbrella of acceptance. But really what they're trying to get us to accept is pedophilia.
Yikes. I was going to ask, for the people who support this, what do you think is the motive? Because I recognize the Alfred Kinseys of the world were perverts, right? Sexual deviants. But it seems like there are people, quote unquote progressives, quote unquote liberals, not all of them, who seem to be okay with this and supportive of it. It's like the whole weird drag queen story time and some of the shenanigans of the Pride Parade where they're taking children to them and so on. And I'm still trying to get my head around this because I'm not somebody who denies evil at all, right? Like there's people who don't think evil exists. Evil is very real. And there are people out there with very dark souls and very ill intentions. But it also seems that there is a much bigger group of people who I just classify as useful idiots, right? I think for every one person who's truly evil and sinister, if they're influential, you know, there's going to be another, I don't know, maybe 10 to 100 people who are not evil or wicked per se, but they somehow end up doing evil because they get wrapped into this because they're convinced that it's good. They're convinced that they're on the so-called right side of history by promoting kind of this kind of stuff. And in the past, it seemed to be, maybe I judged it wrong, but up until literally the past decade, maybe especially the last 7 or 8 years, it always seemed that there was a hard line when it came to children. Across the West, even in the most liberal of countries, it was always like, okay, adults, you know, the most libertine person is like, all right, adults, you know, do what you ever do, whatever, as long as it's consensual. But there was still that hard line of like, all right, kids, no, you leave kids out of it. We draw a hard line between adults and children. And now this is, it's not just being blurred. It's just, I don't know. I just don't know what it is that is enrapturing or brainwashing people to support this. Like, I can't imagine. I mean, you're a parent, but there are parents who are fully on board with this stuff and who are buying these books for these for their children. And that doesn't make sense to me.
It's never going to make sense to anybody who's normal and believes that children should be protected, which is not only common sense. It's biblical, and you don't have to. I don't think you have to believe in God or the Bible to think that children should be protected. It was also scientific. We have volumes and decades of studies done on people who were sexually abused as children, which starts with grooming like this. This is called non-contact sexual abuse, and it leads to contact sexual abuse. We have decades of study, science, that show us that the damage that this does to people's lives is immeasurable and irreversible. I mean, it leads to drug abuse and even cancer and heart disease because of the stress that it adds to people. It adds to promiscuity, more chances of getting STDs. A child that was sexually abused is 3 times more likely to attempt suicide. It goes on and on. So there is no explanation for why this has become quote unquote okay, except that, well, one is it is just a battle of good and evil. And I truly believe that. And there was a time in my life I would have thought it was crazy. You know, I would have said somebody was crazy for saying things like that. But I have a much stronger relationship with God now than I ever have in my life. And I see it flat out. We are in a battle of good and evil. And evil has a lot more power than it should, because now they've come for the children. But I also think from a practical standpoint, look at, say, Epstein Island. They know exactly who was there, who did what. Everybody knows everything. Ghislaine Maxwell is still living and breathing. She knows everything about everybody. If they can normalize this now, then they clear all of their own names. That's one good outcome they want. Sex trafficking is a multi-billion dollar industry. There's a lot of people making a lot of money, but it's a crime. So if they normalize it, it doesn't become such a big crime anymore.
Yeah, I see. I understand this. So I have a general theory when it comes to anything evil now or anything evil throughout history, which I touched on before, which is that I think the higher you get up towards the pyramid of the power or the people who are really putting out the ideas or the ideology, the more it trends towards evil and psychopathy, right? So the people who are at the very, very top, the architects of this stuff, the Alfred Kinseys, the John Moneys, the equivalents who are in this day and age, right? The Epsteins and so on, right? The higher you get up that ladder, it's just like, okay, these are just straight up evil people. My question is around the so-called normal people, right? The parents, right? When I see these images or videos from a drag queen story time, and you have all these moms, and honestly, 90% of the time it's moms, it's liberal white women, to be frank, who are taking their children, their 3, 4, 5, 6 year old kids, to see these men who are dressed up as women, who are doing acts, oftentimes acting inappropriately and so on. And I don't look at those moms. I mean, I look at them as they're clearly being possessed by some type of evil, to use a kind of biblical language, but they don't see it. It doesn't seem like, okay, these people are just evil and it's just as simple as they're evil. It's like they're enraptured by something, or they're just so naive. I don't know. I'm just like, are these people just so naive that they don't really understand what they're doing? Like, that's the part that doesn't I don't understand. I get it at the top. Do you see what I mean? So I'm not confused by the Epstein Island stuff. I understand that in a way.
So I think that first of all, they're seduced by this fantasy that they have a moral high ground and they're protecting people and creating a world that is more tolerant of everybody. But tolerance is exactly what got us in this dilemma to begin with. We're not supposed to tolerate everything, but they think that they're better because they're accepting of a man in a dress and completely ignoring the fact that there's a mental illness there, that if there's a grown man who wants to dance seductively for children, they are completely disconnected from God, and they have all the morals that founded our Western society have kind of gone out the window for a lot of people. So they don't have any of that fiber anymore that says, you know, just be modest and you know, walk a straight path. And I also think that the adults themselves have been groomed. Like when you first start out with, hey, it's just, we want marriage rights, which, you know, most people agree with, that gays should have the right to marry. It's a legal union. It's a right. And it's when they attached all these nut jobs onto the movement, you know, little by little, they didn't come out dancing naked in front of children on day one. They did it gradually. So the people who have bought into this ideology have been groomed themselves to gradually get used to more and more and more sexuality in front of children to where it's been normalized in their own minds. And think about Nazis. Like when Hitler first was rising to power, you know, people really took to him because he was just trying to defend Germany. And then little by little, he started bringing in hate and hate and hate. And then next thing you know, you've got smokestacks of people being burned alive. And then when people got to that point, they said, "Oh, what have we done? What have we been a part of?" But you know, they're still somewhere along that line with these children. And when these children who are being groomed now grow up to be drug addicts with PTSD and all kinds of, you know, STDs and all kinds of health and mental, emotional problems, then they're going to wake up and say, what the hell was I a part of? And all of us are going to be standing here going, yeah, I told you. Told you this was coming. I saw this miles away. Does that make more sense?
No, yeah, it does make sense. I'm just curious as to your take on it, because this is one of those things that I think about a lot. I've studied quite a lot of, you know, particularly in the 20th century, some of the incidents that happened where there's any type of collective madness, right? I mean, it was one of the things I found most interesting about, you know, the time period I call the scamdemic from 2020 to 2022, where there's just this, in this case, global. I mean, normally these things are more localized, but when there's just a global trend of behavior that defies what you would think is logic and reason, and it goes on for such a long period of time, and you're just like, wait, what are people doing? People didn't used to be like this. What is it that has captured the imagination that people are no longer able to really use their faculties properly anymore, right? And people are just willing to do and say things that in normal times they absolutely would not. Right now I'm reading a book. I mean, this is getting heavy here, but I'm reading a book on the 1994 Rwandan genocide. And that's right, because 1994 is not long ago. I mean, that was in my own lifetime. I remember hearing about that on the news when I was a child, right? Almost a million people murdered by their own neighbors in about 3 months. Yeah. Just, I mean, again, that's one that I find it easier to understand some of the horrible stuff of the 20th century than that one, because that was like the government, you know, that was the state, very systematic. They had this whole giant ideology behind it. Whereas this one was just neighbors just turned on neighbors and just started, you know, butchering people who live next door to them and who just, they've been living amongst them for decades in some cases, and in a matter of days, weeks, people just turn. And I'm like, that is terrifying. And there's a part of me that doesn't want to understand it, but then there's another part of me which is just so intrigued by human psychology, even just as a warning, just so it's like, okay, this is how crazy people can get. And so if you're aware of it, I think you protect yourself from it.
How does what you're learning in that book, you know, and really wrapping your head around that phenomenon, because it is a phenomenon. How do you think that fits it, that applies to these, you know, mostly white liberal women who are taking their kids to sex shows?
Wow. Well, I think the underlying pathology is different in these two cases, because one of them is, let's say, the spirit of Cain, right? It's a murderous, hateful, it's this underlying resentment and hatred, and in some cases, envy that's just been bubbling up for decades in the case of Rwanda and prior to certain other genocides, right? Mm-hmm. And then a flashpoint. So in this case, it was the assassination of the president who was part of the Hutu who went on to slaughter the Tutsi ethnic group. And so that was the flashpoint, as in a few hours after his plane was shot down, the massacres began. So there's been all this tension. So that's like rooted in hatred and resentment. Whereas weirdly, this issue, which of course is, I mean, we're not talking about these things are not the same scale, as disturbing as the this whole grooming in the education system is. I think this is, and by the way, I think it's interesting that this is actually quite gendered, because of course the people who did these types of slaughters and massacres, this was almost exclusively men. They killed men, women, and children, but it was almost, right? It was almost exclusively men doing the violence. But then in this case, I think it's the hijacking of the certain female pathologies, right? So I think it is, women are generally considered to be more compassionate than men, more compassionate, more politically correct, more collectivist over individual, more concerned about potential harm, more concerned about how other people may look at them and so on. And I think that is doubled if you're talking about progressives. So if you take like white progressive women, yes, that combination in particular, you know, they want to virtue signal. I think it's the same pathology that allows people to, you know, when you have these mothers who, I'm sure you've seen these TV shows where, you know, you've got someone who weighs 500, 600, 800 pounds and their mom is still feeding them. And again, it's normally the mom, yeah, right? It's normally the mom who is still feeding them and enabling them. It's the same reason fat acceptance and body positivity, it's all pushed on women. It's not pushed on men.
Yeah.
So I think that this is like the extreme form of that female, I don't know, you could call it toxic compassion, or I don't know the exact term for it. It's like the nurturing instinct and the desire to be nice and the desire to be liked and the desire for no one to think that you're a bigot or whatever, that you bend over so far backwards that you allow actual evil to come in and penetrate. It's like weaponizing your own compassion against you. This, by the way, is why wokeness as a whole appeals more to women than it does to men, because it weaponizes compassion. And when you think that you're doing something good, then, or and for the greater good, whether or not it is, then there's not really a limit on how far it can go. And I think that's what's happening.
I think the gender aspect of what you just said is incredible, because there's a couple things there. So the reason there are so many men on the woke train is because of the feminization of men and trying to turn them into women and focusing on their feelings and not just their, you know, being men. So that's why there's so many men there. And then, you know, when I think about women who are into this, they are also really deep into feminist ideology. And the women like me who are out here fighting against this and protecting children, like we're not feminists, you know, we're strong women. We're willing to do whatever it takes for our families and our country, but we are not what has become the modern feminist, which is, you know, man-hating and over-sexualized, you know, promiscuous, you know, thrilled about abortion, all the things, you know, trying to just be a boss babe over being a solid member of your society. That all plays a part in priming them for this kind of ideology that you're talking about that they've adopted. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's very wild indeed. How deep and far does it go? So you've said this is in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. I'm also aware that this goes on outside the USA as well. Yes. Although I think that USA and Canada seem to be ground zero for this. In the UK, actually, there's been, the UK is actually further along in the pushback in terms of all this ideology. But it seems, how deep is it over there?
Well, it comes right down. It starts at the top. It is literally from the White House. The White House is actively talking about something called the Equality Act, which will allow anybody, no matter their gender, to use any locker room, restroom, dressing room at a store, anything you want. So my 84-year-old mother can go into her pool house, in her community and have a naked man standing there and he has a right to be there. Or your little girl can go use a restroom and have a naked man right there next to her. Or a man using the restroom next to her. So it starts at the White House. All throughout our Congress, we have people like Barbara Lee and Cori Bush trying to push bills through that will mandate sex education starting in kindergarten. So they're trying to tie these bills to funding. So either you teach little kids about sex or you're not getting federal funding for education.
Jump in there, the individuals who are pushing this, especially the politicians, in their words, how do they explain that? I'm curious to try to understand their mindset. How do they themselves justify it? So they're coming in saying they want mandatory sex ed for 5-year-olds. How does one even make that argument?
It's absolutely absurd. I can send you some of these bills, and when you read them, the absurdity is wild. It is. They say that it is a part of combating white supremacy, like just complete nonsense. So this is what's going on in America. This is what is happening at the highest levels of government in America, because it combats white supremacy, because historically marginalized communities don't understand sex enough. Like it just completely crazy. And so, they want to teach them about abortion and birth control and sexual attraction and all these things. Like when I was in, second, third grade, I didn't know what an abortion was, and I shouldn't have.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't even know what sex is at that age.
No, and I didn't. I the babies were still delivered by a stork, and that was appropriate at the time. So that's really the thinking behind it. Now, some of the these books, even conservatives have been convinced that they should be able to, talk about this because, children need sex ed, and they're convinced that this is scientific. And, there is some merit to that thinking. There are certain things that we can teach high schoolers to keep them healthy and to keep them smart. But that's not what we're teaching. We're teaching just like sleep with everybody. We're teaching children to sexually abuse each other, to make it okay for an adult to sexually abuse them, and so on and so on. And then they're ready when that online predator comes to sex traffic them, either locally or globally. They're all primed up and ready to go. That guy doesn't even have to work that hard to get that kid to meet up with him.
How much role do you think? I was going to ask how much of a role do you think the internet and social media play in all this?
Well, it's just another breeding ground of hell for children. So it definitely plays a big role. My focus is on the schools, right? So these kids are having this stuff thrown at them from every angle, in children's media and cartoons, in music, on the internet, TikTok, Instagram, wherever these kids are, it's everywhere. Now we also need it 8 hours a day in school. So we should be protecting kids from the internet. Absolutely. And not only is there just overt sexual content that they really don't need to be seeing, they're not developed enough to understand it. There are actual predators on there who are telling these kids, if anybody's telling you that this is wrong, they're wrong. Your parents got your gender wrong they assigned your gender at birth, but they may have gotten it wrong. So, but they're not going to want to hear that. So don't talk to them, talk to me. And then it becomes more and more sexual. So kids are being bombarded everywhere. But the fact that it's happening in our schools is what makes me want to flip tables. I can't take it. And I keep telling people, just pull your kids out. If by any stretch of, you know, everything that you has to change in your life so you can do it, homeschool your children, create a homeschooling pod in your community, get them out, get them out. It's poison.
Yeah. This is, it's one of the reasons that I moved to the UAE instead of the USA. I left the UK in 2021 and I was planning to move to the States. And this is not the only reason, but it's a, this whole basket of ideas and all of this cultural and social rot is one of the reasons why I was like, man, I think I'm going to head back to the Middle East. I grew up in Saudi Arabia, and I can tell you that here, all of this stuff, it's not a thing. It's not a conversation. It's just sane and normal. Because I was just like, you know, I'm willing to use my voice. I'm very outspoken. I'm willing to fight where I need to fight, but I don't have children yet. But when I think about raising my future kids, raising my future family, you know, I talk to all these people, and I know so many parents in the States who are homeschooling and doing things all these different ways. And I think that's good for people to be doing that. But I think it's awful that people feel that they need to. Do you see what I mean? Right? I don't think people should be homeschooling because they're worried about, oh my gosh, if I send my kids to a public school, they're going to get brainwashed and they're going to start thinking I'm racist and everyone's a Nazi and there's infinite genders and they might end up wanting to like get a sex change and they're going to get introduced to all this sexual stuff. I mean, you don't need to go very far back to when that just none of it was a thing. It was just normal. Parents didn't need to have the concerns about what the teachers are teaching their kids. It's like, cool, in math's class, you're learning math. In English, you're learning English. In history, you're learning history. So, I guess the point, let me ask a question with this, and because I'm curious about this. And do you think this is, how would I put it? I'm obviously a massive advocate for freedom of speech and all sane aspects of liberty. But do you think this is almost an inevitable consequence in some ways of, let's call it liberalism? Is this just a natural sort of late stage consequence of it? As in, you, society becomes so tolerant and so open and so free that it's just like, okay, like anything goes. Is this just where it ends up?
This is where godlessness ends up. Mm. I know that for sure. Liberalism in the United States when I was growing up was not this. It wasn't.
I know, but it doesn't stay still though, right? It keeps moving. That's what I mean.
Yeah. So I guess if you equate, because I just see it as godlessness. If you equate the liberal values with a constant separation from God and a constant putting him in the background, then yes, this is the liberals progressed and they call themselves progressive. That's just how I see it.
I'm on your side, but why does a Japan, a China not have this? Maybe say a Japan, because Japan is pretty liberal, but pretty godless too. And I think this would be absolutely a no-no over there.
Yeah, you know, I can't, to be perfectly honest, I don't know enough about their culture, but so, you know, the godless part of it, maybe they have actually still, even if they've abandoned, you know, if they don't have a relationship with God, they still have a relationship with logic. And, you know, like I said, there's still science that proves to us that we need to protect children. And, you know, there's still science around child's brain development and, you know, how they are, we know that you're not developed until you're 25 and you can't handle a lot of things.
Yeah, it's commonsensical. It's just like there's been a, you know, I'm thinking out loud and I think you're a great person to have this discussion with, right? You know, I get asked these type of questions, and, you know, I travel so much and I interact with so many people and all these different countries and cultures and things. And it's like in swathes of people in Anglo-Western countries, it's almost like something that is supposed to be innate within people has been knocked out. And some of it is absolutely connected to religious faith or absence of it. but it's not, it's very multivariable, right? It's not one thing. It's like trying to identify what is that thing that, you know, why is it that for the past decade, there has been a debate for 10 years now about, can a man be a woman? Can a woman be a man? How many genders are there? How many pronouns are there? Can women have penises? Can men get pregnant? Can men menstruate? Should men be in female sports? Should men be in female changing rooms? In 95% of the world, and for 100% of human history, as far as I know, the answer has just been no. You don't even need to get into the depths of science and reason and all that. It's just obvious. It's what people would call common sense. And there's something that's been like that's getting rooted out of people, which is now just allowing all of these things to permeate and to take hold and to enter institutions, corporations, schools, universities, individuals, even some churches. And I'm just like, how is this happening?
There are probably dozens of factors, right? So you can look at our education system here in the US, it has gone off a cliff. We no longer focus, or, you know, our standard for educating our children has gone lower and lower and lower every decade. And now we're at the point where we're focusing on sex and activism instead of actually, you know, reading and writing and math. We're graduating high school seniors who can't read. So we're not being taught how to operate and how to think. Parents aren't in the house, aren't raising their own children anymore. So the children are at the mercy of the world and whatever is put in front of them. So at school and online. Then there's the internet, right? Ruining our attention span and damaging our ability to think. We're being poisoned in our food supply here in the United States. Everything is loaded with pesticides, genetically modified food, processed foods. You know, what you put in your stomach affects your brain and your way to think. Our pharmaceutical medical industrial complex just has us all loaded up and whacked out on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications and other medications that that have side effects for things that we could probably cure with diet and exercise. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So we're being bombarded with poison, physical and mental, spiritual poison all day and night. And then we look around and we go, why is everybody acting like this? Well, you know.
What was it like when you were growing up?
Oh, it was so great. It was so great, man. I'm born in the 70s. And, you know, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and I was in Manhattan a lot. And so I grew up seeing like men in dresses, transvestites, like, and when we'd go to the Village, because Greenwich Village was like, you know, that's where the gay people hung out, but it was also artsy and, you know, you could go there and be whoever you wanted. And we would go there just to go shopping at, you know, cool little stores and things. And, you know, you see a dude in a dress. He didn't think he was a woman. Mm-hmm. We just thought he had, you know, something, the poor thing's got something, life's got to be hard. I felt bad for him because life's harder for a weirdo. It just is. And that, you know, and that's fine. But, you know, he wasn't trying to get in the bathroom with me. And so, you know, we just accepted people and let them be unless they bothered us. There was not like a massively racist feeling. Like there was, you know, some little bit of this or that, but like my grandfather, he was Italian from Sicily. He hated everybody. He hated Black people. He hated Jews. He hated other Italians from other parts of Italy. So like, yeah, there were those old school people like that, you know, who were around and we just would be like, yeah, all right, grandpa, you know, loved him. He took me to the park, but you know, I didn't adopt those things. So those are like older school people, but generally speaking, we all hung out. We all got along. We had a good time. Life was simpler until they started convincing people, young people, that we should all be divided by race. And, you know, we didn't have all that. So I miss that easier going way of life, the slower pace. I really miss life before smartphones. And you can't live without it now if you're in any kind of business, especially now. I mean, you and me, this is our technology, is our the backbone of our business. But it was it was better to go for a walk and just go for a walk. It was okay to tell your friends I'm going to meet you.
Isn't walking a form of white supremacy? I think I've seen that somewhere.
Oh, is it? Oh man, I gotta repent for that. Yeah.
Or was it the outdoors and the countryside? Hiking. It was hiking.
Oh yes. Actually, North Face put out a whole thing about that. They have a whole series of videos about how Black people don't walk in nature and it's white people's fault.
If you go to the whole continent, you'll see zero. You'll see zero Black people walking outside.
Walking in nature. Yes. I didn't even think of that. It's like, this is the absurdity of what they're putting out, and people are gobbling it up. And we were all getting along. You know, I just put out a video. So in my neighborhood in Brooklyn and Canarsie last week or the week before, there was some guy in a car who tried to run over these Jewish men, like Orthodox Jews, you know, and they were outside a Jewish school, and ran them over, and he was screaming, "I'm going to kill all the Jews." And in the neighborhood when I grew up, it was mostly Italians and Jews. That was the main, you know, and there's like 10% other mix. We all got along just fine. You know, there was no problems. And, you know, the Hasidic Orthodox Jews, they kept to themselves completely, but we never had a problem when we did interact with them. And then there were like the more casual Jews who were just like, you know, the people I went to dancing school with, or they were on the softball team with you and we were friends with them. So to pretend, you know, so for this progressive ideology to get us to the point where now people are hating each other again, they hate white people, then they hated Asians for a little while because they're like successful and smart and good at things. So we should hate them. And now we should hate Jews. And they convinced women to hate men. And it just goes, the list of reasons to hate have gone on and on. And, you know, Black people hate white people now. And we didn't have that. We didn't hate each other. So I'm very disappointed in the trajectory of how, you know, how we've moved. And, you know, here in the U.S., one of our keystone phrases is "United we stand, divided we fall," and we're falling hard.
It's really interesting. You've touched on so many points because, you know, I was born in the mid 80s and I grew up primarily in Saudi Arabia, but I did travel to the States when I was young. I spent a lot of time in the UK. I went to boarding school in the UK from the age of 11 onwards. And in the 90s and in the 2000s, in my experience, like, just no one gave a crap about all this stuff. People just got on. I often say that humanity peaked somewhere around the year 2000, give or take a decade. And just in the, you know, it's the 2010s and then the 2020s, it's smartphones play some role in this for sure. Smartphones and social media are certainly a factor, but I don't know. I think it's very interesting. You know how they say that, you know, there was that whole thing about all these men thinking about the fall of Rome, and we're just at this interesting and unique stage of our countries where we've hit a certain level of development and comfort and true equality under the law, and really reduced to a small percent the true amount of racism and sexism and misogyny and homophobia, all these things that have been very prevalent throughout human history and which have resulted in some truly awful incidents. It's almost like people collectively just got too comfortable and maybe a bit of boredom set in, and individuals and groups and institutions just realized, hey, we can shake this up a bit. We can stir the pot and we can do the old divide and conquer tactics once again. And sadly, it works. Sadly, it is effective. If you can make people have these grievance narratives that because they're Black or because they're a woman or because they're gay or because they identify as trans or because they're whatever the thing is, it's what I find fascinating is no matter what demographic you fit into, there's a victim narrative for you.
Absolutely.
That's what I find really fascinating, right? It doesn't matter who you are.
You know what it does? It ties two things in. It's the complacency and the comfort that we got into here in the US. We were just like, oh, life is good. Life is good. We trust the government. We trust all the institutions. We're just going to go about and build our beautiful lives. And then you add in that victimhood. You added in this slow burn of an ideology of self-idolatry. So it started with, when I was a little girl, self-esteem. That's when the buzzword came in, self-esteem and loving yourself and then following your dreams. And now it's just me all day long. So then you come in and you're like, hey, come here, you, I got a victim story for you. You're a victim. Did you know? And you're already completely self-obsessed with yourself and your dreams and your feelings and your thoughts and your identity. And then they make you a victim. And then we have people screaming in the streets and gluing themselves to the street for what they believe is right. We didn't have this before. We didn't have people, never in my life, ever growing up. I try to tell this to my son and young people. Nobody glued themselves to an intersection. Nobody blocked ambulances from getting to the hospital. And if they did, they probably would have been run over. You know, this is completely, I'm living in the twilight zone as somebody, and I feel so bad for my son who is growing up in this wackadoo world. But I'll tell parents and you too, if you want to like watch as your kids are coming up, if you want to watch TV with them, watch 70s and 80s shows. And that's what I did with my son. We would watch like, Family Ties or Cheers or The Wonder Years, like the entire series all the way through. And what it did was gave us an opportunity to have conversations about what things were like. And he got this like normal programming where people didn't hate each other and everything wasn't about activism and anger. And I think that's why he's who he is today, or part of it, because, you know, he looks at the blue hairs and he's like, what are they doing over there? You know, I thank God that, you know, he's like that, because I don't know if I'm patient enough as a mother to cope with a child who has just a complete, you know, is completely delusional about what the world really is.
As the mother of a young man, what are your thoughts on the current situation, the current state of young men and young women?
I feel sorry for all of them. So the young women have been brainwashed into thinking that they can sleep with everybody and everything that moves and then still deserve a high quality man. And they have not been taught at all the true nature of men and women and what men, you know, instinctively look for. And so they're all being set up for disappointment and being 35 alone in an apartment with their cats. And we're seeing that play out actively, because they've been told that they should love their career more than, you know, building a family and creating a life. Now for the young men, they're either in that trap too, just like, hey, you know, gonna, you know, making hay while the sun shines with all the girls who are loose and fancy free. They're not able to really end up making real connections with women. And that's sad. And if a man, you know, for the few on both sides who are still more conservative and really just want a more traditional life, there, it's getting harder and harder for them to find each other. I don't know how they're gonna pull that off. You know, my son is a YouTuber, so like he gets, you know, he meets girls, but he's like, I don't know that I want this one. And I'm in his ear too, you know, stay away. You're going to catch a disease, you know, like a crazy person. But yeah, that's how I talk to him. It's crazy. So I don't know. I think it's going to create a lot of lonely people because no one knows how to really bond and commit and keep their word. Everyone's so selfish and trained to be selfish.
Yeah. I'm at an interesting age because I'm 37. And I often think that people around my age, let's say, I don't know, people up until like their early 30s, we're the last people who are going to remember and have lived through the pre-internet, pre-smartphone, pre-social media world. For everyone younger than that, pretty much certainly anyone under about 25 from this point onwards, they've never really known the world without all of these things. And I think that's a real fundamental shift in humanity. If you think for all the thousands of years of humanity up until that point, up until, I don't know, let's say, I'd say around 2010 is when the smartphone and social media combination became mainstream and quite ubiquitous. And from this point onwards, I mean, I think that children are now on the internet in many cases before they're even born because, right, women put up their baby scans and everything. So we're now living in a world where you can have a 10-year-old And you can quite literally trace him and see images of him, like from inside his mother's womb to newborn, toddler, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? All the way through. And I'm just like, man, that's crazy. And just having billions of people connected, so much information, so many opinions, ability to just connect with anyone and everyone. In the past, that option just wasn't available. You know, you live in New York City and you connect with people. If you want to meet people in LA, you need to go to LA, let alone, I mean, look at what we're doing right now. We are thousands upon thousands of miles away from each other. And we're speaking here in real time. And then we can post this up online, broadcast it out to thousands or potentially millions of people. So there's a lot of good that can come with it. And it's been amazing for human connection in some ways. But then on the flip side, people are more lonely and disconnected than ever. So there's this very strange oxymoron of this time that we're living in.
Wow. I don't even know if I have anything to add to that, except that I kind of sometimes fantasize about the grid going down. And I realize how bad, there's going to be a lot of chaos that happens with that. But the if it goes down for long enough, the healing that could happen on the collective human mind by not being exposed, first of all, just not this goldfish 10 second attention span that we all have now, like that would heal. Not constant negativity and comparing ourselves to what's going on the world, going out and touching grass and talking to other humans because there's nothing else to do. Like the upside, I think, would far outweigh the downside. And so, it's a little scary, the thought of, you know, World War III pending and all those things that, you know, we're kind of in some chaos right now. But if it happens, I want everybody to know there's some really bright silver linings to just getting off the internet for an extended period of time, collectively for all of us. Because we're addicted. We're not going to do it on our own.
That's for sure. We've talked about a lot of the craziness going on, but what is it that what are you feeling positive and optimistic about right now?
Okay. So, for me, I'm connecting with a lot of people around the country and around the world also on the particular issue that I'm working on. And I'm seeing more and more people wake up. And I am starting to see people say, I'm not afraid to speak up and I will. I think we have a long way to go with that. So that keeps me a little bit more optimistic. I think people are starting to wake up to the mainstream media nonsense, that they're just constantly being manipulated. When it comes to the kids here in America, I'm very encouraged by like the UK and they're banning gender affirming care for kids because it's medical experimentation and it sterilizes children and mutilates their bodies. And here in the States, more and more states are adopting that type of legislation. And those are the things that are really giving me some encouragement and seeing. And you know, the worse things get as a Christian, the worse things get, the more I know that we're closer to, you know, the good things coming. The Bible tells us like it's all going to go to hell in a handbasket. And then, you know, Jesus is going to come back and straighten it all out and do the great sorting. And I do believe that. So, you know, I try to focus on the silver linings and that's what keeps me going. Seeing young people like my son and his friends look at all this woke madness and say, we're not having any of this. And there are more and more young people waking up and saying, get this drag show thing away from me. Get this rainbow flag away from me. Yeah, I'm a boy. I was born a boy and I know I'm a boy. And that's happening. So we do have reasons to be encouraged, but we can't let that allow us to slip back into complacency. We have to fight this fight all the way.
Amen. Elena, I think that's a strong place to stop. You're someone who I could talk to for a very long time, I'm sure, about a big range of topics, but I want to keep this to around an hour. Where can people find and follow you online?
I'm at The Based Mother on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And I would love if people would take a look at the film. It's called American Groomer, and I made it free for everyone to watch. It's at AmericanGroomerFilm.com, and man, it'll ruin your day. it'll ruin your day. And that's what I'm trying to do. I want to ruin everyone's day. I want to ruin, you know, people who are sleeping. I want to wake them, make them say, wow, I didn't know it was so bad. And the people who were doing it, I want to ruin their day too and say, wow, she's exposing us. And it makes me mad.
And I've seen the documentary myself. I highly recommend it. I'll put the link in the description as well. So if you're listening to this and you are intrigued, then go check it out. But yeah, be warned, it will make you angry.
Yeah. All right. Elena. Well, thank you so much. This was a great conversation. I really loved it. Thanks for having me.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.